Welcome to the CB Wallet Podcast. I'm Phil Lucas.
And I'm Phil Gerrard. Why are we here, Phil?
Well, we are going to talk about the greatest disasters in world history and some you may never have heard about. What went wrong, how it went wrong, and whether it was our fault or God's fault.
Bloody marvellous. But remember, Phil, it's not our intention to make light of the sometimes quite substantial mortality rate to some of these disasters, is it?
No.
Are you sure?
I'm wavering.
Okay. Well, I think we should just be interested in finding out what went wrong. And be honest with yourself, Phil, if it came on the news, I reckon you'd be interested, you rancorous bag of hammers.
I hate fake news. I love breaking news. Sometimes I do like fake news.
What are we banging on about this week?
The Musée Étienne Terrasse.
Let's go to the south of France now. The Étienne Terrasse Museum, featuring work by the 19th century artist, was undergoing renovations. An art historian was brought in to help handle and care for the artist's work when he made a shocking discovery.
Art. Nice to be doing an art one. I don't think we've done an art one before. Do you like art?
I know what I like. I've got fairly varied, you know. When I was young, I was into me Miros and me Kandinskys.
Oh, really?
But now, you know, I like me Turner, I like me Constables.
The Turners and the Constables, they are a more acquired taste, aren't they? Because for a kid, very boring.
Yes.
Extremely boring. The sort of complex interplay of light and shadow goes right over your head, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
But when you're a bit older, actually, those old masters, you look at them and you start to go, how the fuck has he done that? How has he done that? No, really, no. Answer me. Get over here. Answer me. How has he done that? Right. Have you ever seen any big famous arts? Have you ever gone along to see a big famous art?
I think I've seen a lot of the big European stuff. Yeah, you know, I've done me Monet, I've done me Mona Lisa, I've done your bloke who paints in dots.
Your Sura.
I've done me Sura, done me Rothko's.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, done all your big stuff, mate. What about you? What's the biggest painting you've seen?
What, biggest in size?
No, in fame.
In fame. Do you know what? It's going to be the Mona Lisa, isn't it? Mm. I haven't seen The Last Supper. That's in Florence.
Yeah, I've not seen that.
I've not seen The Last Supper. That's basically disappearing, isn't it? Because he painted it on flour. Don't paint things on flour, Leonardo. even I know that. Ubermensch my ass. I've been to the Van Gogh Museum, but the Van Gogh Museum is a really interesting experience because none of his stuff's in there.
Is it really?
Well, it's all around the world, isn't it?
Oh,
it's all,
I suppose it is. Yeah. Have you ever seen a Hitler?
I was going to ask you about Hitler. I've never seen a Hitler. Where are they?
I think most of them are in private collections.
I bet they are. in your basement.
I have seen a Hitler sketch.
Really?
But I can't. Off the life of me, remember? I mean, I've been to so many museums where something like that could possibly be.
That's right.
I've lost track. I know where it was. I've got it now. When I did a World War One tour, we stopped off at a little village which had a tiny little museum. And when Hitler was in the army, he drew a little sketch for one of the villagers who he'd befriended, and that sketch is in the museum.
Is it good?
It's all right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know much about art, but...
I know what I like.
I know what...
it's difficult, Hitler's art, because it is good. It's not great, right? But, like, he can, you know, Hitler can paint, right?
Yeah.
Get that on a T-shirt. Right? But he could paint. He was talented.
Mm.
And the pictures have a quality, don't they? They are freaky and lonely. There's never a figure in them. They're always empty. And they're all sort of buildings. But he really nails like the different planes of the buildings and a lot of the light and those sorts of things. And so it does really feel like if that art dealer had... he wouldn't even have had to have bought them. He could have just not called him a prick. Like, if he'd just not called him a prick, I reckon the whole of the 20th century would have been different.
God, we could have carried on with our prosperity, had no war, and we could be looking at those at the National Gallery now.
I know. Do you know who I've got in my bedroom? A Hitler. Obviously, it's not an authentic Hitler. That's in the Museum of Modern Art in New York. But no, this is a print of a Hitler I got in IKEA. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I don't know any other dictators who drew.
That's a thing, isn't it? I'm sure there are some, but Hitler really is cornering the market in dictator art.
Yes. I mean, I bet they all tried for vanity.
Yeah, especially during that period, you know what I mean? Because it was so cool.
Yeah.
Like, to be an artist was the coolest thing. Like, being an artist was basically like being on TikTok. You know what I mean? It was the coolest thing you could do in 1910. I tell you, I haven't seen any Hitler paintings, but I tell you what I have seen. I've seen some serial killer art.
Have you?
I have, and I saw it in the weirdest place, right?
Go on.
I was in, I lived in Sydney for a bit, right? Mm. In Sydney, all of the shops are underground.
Right,
big,
okay.
Big shopping centres underground, right? And underneath, there is a massive record store, right?
Right.
It's gigantic HMV-esque type record store. And at the back of the record shop is serial killer art that you can buy.
Wow. Not originals, I hope.
Yeah,
not...
no, originals. Original serial killer art.
So it's actually a gallery rather than just prints of stuff they've nicked off Google Images.
No, it's a gallery, yeah, and it's like behind glass.
Oh my God.
And I think they had that. Richard Ramirez used to do quite
Jesus
a lot of art.
Christ.
I think they had a Richard Ramirez. The guy dressed up as a clown did loads of paintings.
Oh.
And they had, what's his name?
John Wayne Gacy?
John Wayne Gacy used to dress up as a clown. They've got loads of his on there. And I tell you what, they were expensive. But I do think it might be fun to have a John Wayne Gacy in your bathroom, wouldn't it?
Jesus.
So, Phil,
The
Musée Étienne Terrasse. Am I saying that right?
I don't know. I'd wondered that. Is it a silent S?
Well, Étienne must be right because of St. Étienne.
Yes.
Terrasse.
It's Terrasse, isn't it?
In the past sort of month or so, we've had some terrible Twitter bashing for our fabulous accents. I felt... bad about the American accents, even though they were supposed to be Canadian. I did feel very bad about that. There was somebody who contacted us and made a comment about it, and I felt so bad because those accents were terrible.
It's because you're desperate for this podcast to break America, aren't you?
My ambition is to break America. And so that is not going to happen by us going, oh my God. No. So we love you, America. Please keep listening to the podcast. But I thought my Bristol accent was on the nose. When I listened to that back, I was like, do you know what, Phil? You have nailed that Bristol accent. But this is going to be an opportunity to do some very sketchy French accents.
Definitely. And of course, the thing is, I don't know about you, but for me, when we deal with foreign accents and foreign pronunciations, I don't give a toss about getting them right. I just want to get the feeling over. I'm not massively bothered about whether it's right or wrong. So
very much an impressionist.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
The Musée Étienne Terrasse. What was that? This is not the right. Let's get some French accents going so we know how they sound. Is this a French accent? Yes, it is. Okay. The Musée Étienne Terrasse. What was that?
It was an art gallery in the south of France that discovered over 60% of its collection was fake.
Oh, shit. When did it happen?
The paintings were collected over a 20-year period, but the realisation that a huge amount of them were fakes only came to light in 2018, so a recent one.
And this caused how many people to die?
None, as far as I know. But, you know, Phil, the world of art forgery is a murky one.
Terribly murky.
Who knows?
Right. The Musée Étienne Terrasse. Tell us what that was, Phil, now immediately.
The Museum Étienne Terrasse is a museum located in Elne in southern France, and it is a museum dedicated to the work of the artist Étienne Terrasse, who was a local resident.
I've never heard of him. Have you heard of him before this podcast?
I hadn't, no.
That's bad of us, isn't it? Have you looked at any paintings?
Yeah.
Are they nice?
They're all right. They're quite landscapey, and they're a sort of, well, local, rural scenes.
Would you have it in your... in your conservatory?
I think I'd possibly do a conservatory or bathroom. I'm not sure it would make it to the main rooms in the house, but that's really? No.
Just reserved for Hitler. If you had to describe his style in one word, what would it be?
Like the sort of painting you would see round your gran's house when you were a kid.
Okay. You're saying it's shit. His shit car boot sale art.
It's old.
Old shit art. Right. Okay, so we know where we stand.
It's quite nice. Whether it's got any merit, I don't know.
Okay. Let's take this from step one. You mentioned Elne in southern France.
Yes.
Where the hell is that?
It is so far down in southern France, is Elne, that it is as good as Spain. If you can picture it, Phil, France is quite big, isn't it?
Bloody massive. Big.
And you know, if you look at France on a map, there's a thinner bit, isn't there, to the left of France, just as it joins Spain.
A little tail.
Little tail, yeah. Elm is right at the bottom of that little tail.
Ooh, lovely.
The nearest French place to it that you've probably heard of is a Perpignan.
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 Oh, okay. Yeah. So more sort of Mediterranean than Parisian.
Yeah, very Mediterranean food. You've hit the nail on the head there. It's only 2.5 miles from the Med. And, you know, as you can imagine, down there, weather's lovely. The little village is full of pretty architecture.
I bet it's fucking gorgeous.
Oh, lovely hot baguettes. ball, old men playing ball.
Oh,
wise
old men playing ball. Oh, yeah. God, I'd love to go outside and play a bit of ball.
All in all, I reckon that Elm is probably the sort of place that if you used Ocado and had children called Ludlow and Opal, you would probably crave to live in, yeah. Or you would at least upset the community ambience there by buying a second home and using it only twice a year.
It seems like the sort of place that, try as they might, they just can't get rid of Rick Stein. No matter, oh God, here he comes, wandering round another market.
There's all these old dears like looking behind the curtains going, has he gone? He wants my recipe that's been handed down through generations. He won't leave me alone.
Stand in an ill-fitting white crepe shirt, taking notes while I cook mussels yet again. So lovely. Give me some facts about Elm, you prat.
Okay. The population is just over 8,500, so a tiny little place, really.
Okay.
When the Arabs crossed the Pyrenees in 719, Elm was one of the first towns to be attacked.
Oh, interesting. Is there any... that's quite a long time ago. Was there any sort of... Are there any evidence of that in the modern day Elm?
I don't know if it goes that far back, but I do know it's got a very old cathedral, which goes back to 1285, Phil.
Oh, okay.
And
nice one.
It was in that year that cathedral was plundered, set fire to. And there were people in there who had taken refuge because they were plundering the town outside.
Yeah.
And they were all massacred by the French troops of Philip III. Because it's so close to Spain, it's one of those towns that over the years has kind of flipped between, owned by them, owned by France, owned by whatever bits of Spain were before they were Spain, you know.
Alsace-Lorraine.
All that malarkey. But now I think it's firmly French.
Okay.
But I think still a bit of Catalan influence.
So we've got the measure of the place, Phil. And yep. We understand its geography. It's on the tail of France, isn't it?
Mm.
Or, if you prefer, France's willy. But you also mentioned the artist Étienne Théroux. tell me about this arty Frenchman immediately, Phil.
Étienne Théroux was born in 1857 when he was 17 years old. He went to study in Paris, but he didn't like it there. He came back to Elm, where he was sort of largely from, and that's where he produced most of his artistic output. You know, he did like his landscapes and his countryside.
It's mad that he didn't like it, because, like, imagine being in Paris in 1857. That is just wall-to-wall absinthe and parties and sex and parties and sex and art and parties and sex and drugs and art and parties and sex and art and drugs and prostitutes. Like, what's wrong with Étienne Théroux?
He couldn't paint churches in valleys.
Get out to the Folies Bergère and paint some prostitutes, mate. What are you doing? I feel sad that Étienne Théroux didn't enjoy Paris in the 1850s, because that seems to me like a missed opportunity.
Maybe it's a tortured soul.
Well, he definitely needs to be in Paris in 1850 because they're all narcissists.
Rightly or wrongly, the chap didn't like Paris much, and he came back to Elm, where he produced most of his artistic output. Now, he is considered one of the precursors of Fauvism. Do you know what that is, Phil?
It's all like when they're all like pretty and that. No, I don't.
Fauvism is the style of Les Fauves, French for wild beasts, a group of early 20th century modern artists whose work emphasised painterly qualities and strong colour over the representational or realistic values retained by Impressionism. While Fauvism as a style began around 1904 and continued beyond 1910, the movement as such only lasted a few years. The leaders of the movement were André Derain and Henri Matisse. Now, during his life, old Etienne was very much respected by those other artists, and he was friends with Henri Matisse. We've all heard of Henri Matisse. In fact, Etienne and Henri were pen pals from 1905 to 1917. I'll be honest, though, I've no idea what happened after 1917, whether they stopped writing or just fell out.
Have you ever met anybody who stayed in touch with a pen pal? I mean, never all there, are they? Okay, so I've got the background, Phil. You've done that very well. I understand everything. There's this lovely little French town, got a well-respected artist living there. He's a bit of a fauvist, and they've got a museum dedicated to him, as they would have. What else are they going to do, right?
Mm.
It's now time for you to tell me about that museum.
Okay.
That's where we are, Phil, in the podcast. You've got to tell me about the museum.
I'm ready to go. The Musée Étienne Tharoux was opened in 1994. So that is actually 72 years after the old buffer died. So it took him a while to honour him.
Is that anything to do with the fact that copyright lasts 70 years?
Very cynical man. Now, Phil, as a general rule, the ground floor of the museum is reserved for Étienne Tharoux and some of his fellow artist mates. The other two floors host temporary exhibitions of sort of contemporary artists every 3 months or so. So they're going to be shit. Should be made clear, Phil, and I want to make this absolutely crystal clear. This is not a very big museum, right?
Not the Louvre.
It's definitely not the Louvre. If you were to take the time to Google image this museum, I would say that it is best described as resembling a modest terraced house.
Oh, okay.
Very small. There's only so many fields and small churches you can paint if you're not prepared to walk 2 miles from your front door.
Especially if you feel like you've nailed it the first time. Do it in the daytime, do it at night. What else is there? Now, if we said before, all that stuff you told us is very good, right? That's
yes,
giving
thank
us
you.
A picture. But there is no better way of getting a flavour of any public attraction actually into your mind head than looking at reviews on TripAdvisor. And that's exactly what we're going to do now. But because I'm a bastard, I went straight for the one-star reviews. You up for this?
Oh, yeah.
The museum actually hasn't got any one-star reviews.
No.
Not a single one, which is a shame, because they're the best ones, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's got no two-star reviews either. This is...
Blimey.
I want to think it's either an extremely amazing museum, or it's only reviewed by the people who work at the museum. The museum itself has only got 21 reviews in its 26-year history. So we've got more good reviews than this museum. Still, it's good not to have to say any negative things about it, isn't it, Phil? It's nice during this period of lockdown. Let's hear what people have to say about the place to give us a vibe of this museum of fakery.
TripAdvisor number one.
His paintings are very attractive, rather than revolutionary, and there is a reasonable selection on view.
TripAdvisor review number two.
If you are looking for A-list paintings adorned by heavy gilt frames in this modest museum, you will be disappointed.
TripAdvisor review number three.
I was pleasantly surprised, small enough not to bore the kids.
That's all you want from a museum. TripAdvisor review number four.
The paintings on view was apparently collected by the mayor, so full marks to him, I say.
Is it full marks to him, though, Phil?
Was it full marks to the mayor? It wasn't, and here's why. The 27th of April, 2018, cast your mind back to when the world made sense, you could still go to the shops without being scared for your life. This 27th of April, 2018, started like any other, Phil. It right. was supposed to be a wonderful day for the small regional museum dedicated to one of its most beloved artists.
Oh.
The museum had been closed for a few months for renovation.
Right.
Right. So they painted it, done all the woodwork, unclogged the toilet, right?
Lovely.
Now, the renovation would have allowed it to display more of the lovely Étienne Tharoux paintings it had acquired over the years, right? They was going to pack it with fauvism, mate.
Right. Superstar.
Now, this would hopefully also draw more tourists to the area. They're sick of it just being Rick Stein year on year on year. They want to attract more TV chefs to the area. Why can't Jamie Oliver come and cook a mussel?
Ainsley.
Like, Ainsley. Why can't we have Ainsley walking up the beach, then walking down the beach, then walking back up the beach, right? There were plans for a big new exhibition to showcase all of their recent acquisitions.
Oh, I bet they're so proud.
Exactly, because, specifically because since 2014, the museum had been on an expansion drive fueled by fervent volunteers and supporters all around the local area, aww, right? They basically wanted to get all of Theroux's paintings in one place,
yeah,
right? And they'd amassed a huge budget for buying art. Art is not cheap.
It's not cheap.
If you know anything about art, thing one is it's not cheap.
No.
Right? And some of the funding for buying the art had come from the local government, okay?
Right.
So the local government, the mayor, I assume, had put loads and loads of money into buying this Fauvist art. Mm. It was going to be a proud and historic day in the history of the museum.
Right.
Except, Phil, it turned out to be a dark day in the history of Elne, worse even when the Arabs set fire to it. Because when the mayor of Elne stood to speak at the inauguration of the renovated museum, right? Did he smile, Phil? He did not.
Oh.
Did he say nice things about the museum? He did not.
Oh.
Did he cut a ribbon? No, he did not.
Oh.
I should tell you what he did do, Phil. Mm-hmm. He announced that 60% of the collection was fake. Now,
that's a kick in the nuts.
It wasn't what people were expecting. It's the opposite of what they were expecting, right? The mayor, he was called Phil?
Yves Barniol.
Barniol. Yves Barniol. Like Yves Saint Laurent, right? Yves.
Yves.
I like, it's one of those names, Yves, where you know that says Yves, but none of those letters make that sound.
No.
That's Yves Barniol.
That's Yves, isn't it? Yves Barniol, that is.
Okay, so Yves Barniol. He'd known about the fakes for months.
Right.
He'd known. It was in his purview. And they had already contacted the police about them, right? The police were heavily involved at this point. 82 works out of a total of 140, altogether worth approximately £140,000, had already been seized by the police. They'd had them.
Oh.
They'd come in, cut them out of the frame.
God.
Put them in the back of the van.
That's a lot.
It was a huge embarrassment, not just for the mayor, but for all of the people of Elne. But they did feel that it was better to come clean at this point. I mean, what else could they do?
Yeah, half the paintings are with the police. They didn't have much choice.
Yeah, that's right. It is difficult, isn't it? Like, if you were selling watches,
yeah,
and go, have you got any you can show me? I'm sorry, I keep them all in police evidence locker.
Yeah.
Oh. As old Mayor Barniol said at the time, Phil?
It is a disaster! A catastrophe! Knowing that people have visited the museum and seen a collection, most of which is fake, is bad. It's a catastrophe for the municipality. 60,000 people have seen these fakes over the last 15 years. That is unforgivable. Intolerable.
I mean, it's no wonder he was pissed off, right? I mean, you would be pissed off, right? Because, I mean, he'd become mayor in 2014, but they had been spending thousands upon thousands of euros to restore some of these acquired paintings, right? And he was the absolute, like, linchpin in the centre of that, like, talking that up and making sure that that happened, right? Thousands and thousands of pounds. And they've been putting money into installing better lighting for the museum and regulating the building's temperature so all of the fake works could be better preserved, right?
Oh.
£265,000 of municipal funding was spent right there renovating that building.
And that's in addition to the 140 grand that was spent on the paintings themselves.
Yeah, it's a shitload of money. So you've got this local authority that's chucked in a proportion of the £140,000 it cost to acquire some of these prime Etienne Theroux art pieces, and then eagerly spent another £265,000 renovating the museum. And then comes the day, and it comes to light that all of the art is bollocks. It's bollocks, Phil. Right? It's bollocks. All up the walls. It's all up the fucking walls, mate. It's all bollocks. How the hell did this come about, and why did it take so long to come to light, Phil? Tell me immediately.
Well, it was actually due to the museum's expansion that all of this shit show blew open, right? And this is where we introduce a Frenchman called Eric Foucarda.
Sounds like a very spongy bread to me. Cheese topped Foucarda. I could go for a bit of that right now.
You'd definitely get that in Waitrose and it wouldn't be bagged up. You'd have to ask for it.
Excuse me, I'm looking for Eric Foucarda. Oh, yes, yes. Yes, it's over there in the cured meats, you old bastard.
Eric Foucarda was chosen by the Elne municipality to oversee the renovation, you see, of the Musée Theroux. making it, you know, all ready to display their lovely new works of art. As soon as he started receiving images of them at home on his computer at the end of August 2017, he knew something was wrong. Phil?
I said to myself, it is not possible.
There was barely any stylistic consistency among the new works. A lot were crude and not at all consistent with the work of the charged colourist who had captivated Matisse. Further investigation into the museum's collection revealed even more anomalies. As Foucarda said, Phil...
On the one painting, the ink signature was wiped away when I passed my glove over it.
Even for a fake, you'd think they would make it a little bit more than that.
Yeah, just whack it on in biro.
Another painting he saw had been signed twice by different artists.
That's a fair cop.
I think what they'd done there is they'd, like, someone else had painted it, and the forger had gone, I want to make this a Teru. So he just like faked his signature but kept the art. And there were also watercolours on perfect modern white paper. That is a forger who can't even be asked anymore. That's lazy.
A bit of old printer paper.
Put some effort into it. Although, Phil, perhaps the most flagrant examples, and these are my favourite, were the two oil paintings featuring the Chateau Royal at Coulières. Okay. Mm. Now, that is a port just a few miles south of Elm. Now, these paintings featured a flat roof tower on the castle that had been renovated that way in 1957.
Right.
Before then, it didn't have a flat roof. It had a pointy roof. all well and good, Phil. Trouble is, 1957, Teru had been dead 35 years.
It's a problem. It is a problem. But I think he's ahead of his time. A lot of these painters were, you know, they were visionaries, Phil.
I can see that the roof is pointy, but I think it would look better with a flat roof, and I want to paint the feeling of the chateau.
Well, it's the very definition of artistic license, isn't it?
Yes, I don't think you can deduce anything from that at all. No, I don't think that's...
Okay, okay.
Very shaky evidence there, Phil.
All right, then. Well, added to the mix, yeah, that some of the museum's paintings turned out to be exact copies of old postcard photography of the village. Okay. And others, right, although from Teru's era, were painted by other local artists but had been tampered with to make them look like Teru's work. And I'll be honest with you, Phil, I think you got a can of worms there.
It does seem to me like instead of opening the museum as the Teru Museum, right, just open it up as the local Elm Museum of Arts and Crafts.
Anyway, Phil, backed up by three other specialists, Foucarda explained his findings at a meeting of the two associations and the local authority that had funded all these purchases for the gallery. And his views were later corroborated by another expert.
People were shocked,
says Foucarda.
How could they have been fooled when they did everything in good faith?
Foucarda soon realised that he had uncovered something bigger. The day the public announcement was made, he started receiving calls from worried private collectors who wanted him to verify their own works by Teru.
Oh, it goes all the way to the top, Phil. This goes all the way to City Hall.
Village Hall.
This goes all the way to Village Hall.
It became very clear that the art market in Roussillon, that is the wider region, was, and I quote Foucarda here, Phil...
Gangrenous.
Gangrenous. What a
it's
great word.
It's basically saying he's rotten, isn't it? You know, it's
rotten,
a bit sort of...
yes. Rotten. And Foucarda estimates that there are hundreds of forgeries in circulation. 200 to 300 of those are probably Teru or Terraces.
Wow.
Worth, Phil, as much as £1 million.
Oh, forget it, Jake. It's Teru's town. Where are most of these fakes then? Where are they all?
Well, I suppose the good news, if you're not a local authority, is that most of them are in private hands. But of course, the problem is that some are not.
Yeah.
In May 2018, just a few weeks after Foucarda's discovery came to light, the Musée Regard, which is Perpignan, remember the big city nearby, it's their main art museum, They allegedly withdrew two suspect paintings by Terrace's contemporary, a gentleman called Augustin Hanicote. And there was another museum in the area, the Museum of Modern Art in Serret, 14 miles from Elm, which put a large collection it had been bequeathed into the hands of experts because they were worried about it. Now, Foucarda, who had seen that large collection bequeathed, reckons about 5% of those are doubtful.
I bet it's been going on for years. They've just been whacking names on the bottom of crappy paintings.
All of this sounds like something much bigger than a single museum being ripped off, doesn't it? There's something wider going on here, isn't there?
That's true. And that was a view that was echoed very much by Monsieur Matteo Ponsardil.
Who was he then?
Well, that gentleman, who I think we should call Monsieur Matteo, because I can't pronounce the rest of his name, and I don't want to upset him more than is necessary. Anyway, he was a lawyer representing the Etienne Terrou Museum, right?
Ah, right, okay.
Now, his view on all of this went thusly, Phil.
There's not one man acting alone who would have made such vulgar copies and would have then sold them under his jacket. This is a whole system that includes those who find the paintings, those who add the fake signature, the person who gives it to the antique dealer, and a gallery owner or car boot salesman who then sell it themselves and thereon until it arrives at the museum.
Little known fact about Monsieur Matteo, he's actually a Mexican gentleman. We should have pointed that out earlier. From southern Spain.
Well, it's very, very close to Spain, this village.
No, I think that's fine. Yeah, I think what you've done there is you've done it so well that it's...
I brought in the Catalan influence.
You brought in the Catalan influence. It's very clever. So what I'm basically saying is I don't think anybody should have a go at someone on Twitter for that one. That's you nailed that. Now, we started this podcast, right, talking about a fun old museum that bought a load of fakes, right?
Mm.
But... scratch the surface, Phil. And where are we? We're delving into the murky and complex world of underground art crime.
Ooh.
Where everyone's implicated. It's a dirty world, Phil.
This is the sort of shit Lovejoy needs to be in.
This is the sort of shit Lovejoy would have revelled in. The reason that such a small museum like the Musée Étienne Terrou suffered is quite easy to understand, right? Now, remember Eric Foucarda?
How could I forget him?
The guy with a lovely bit of olive oil drizzled over his head, right? That chap. Now, he discovers all the fakes, right?
Yes.
Well, his opinion is that the forgers exploited the intensity of the local art scene, right? These bastards, they love art, right? Get your biro out, Terry. We're going to make millions. Right? Because this area of France, and France generally, you know what I mean, they've got a passion for homegrown artists. It's very much them. So there's loads of these little tin pot artists around the place, right? And loads of these artists in this area are relatively little known, right?
Mm.
But they're good. That's the thing. They're good artists. It's just they're not famous artists, not big artists.
Right. Yeah.
They're people who can paint a picture and you look at a picture and you go, yeah, it's a nice picture, right?
Very pretty.
The sorts of arts that would be bought by people who don't know much about art, but know what they like. Okay. But they're not valuable. They're not valuable enough to be the subject of the kind of scrutiny that somebody like a Pablo Picasso, say, would undergo before an auction.
Yes, people would be all over those, wouldn't they, to check it's real.
Exactly, right? Yeah, go for somebody a little bit low level and a lot of the heat is off.
Clever.
For the forgers, the rewards are very attractive. Because paintings, even if they're passed off as work of relatively unknown local artists like Terrou, they can be sold between 10,000 and 100,000 euros, Phil.
That's not insubstantial money, is it?
No, it's not. It's still big money for even these sort of lower level, I'd say they're sort of mid-level, right? Mid-table artists.
Yeah.
Because art terms just go bananas, don't they?
Ridiculous. All the art in my living room, the frames are worth more than what's inside them.
Well, that's true, isn't it? It also goes for your wardrobe, doesn't it? So, because they're moderately priced in art terms, many of these fakes, they were all bought by non-experts. Do you know what I mean? So they're selling stolen goods. So like, do you want a radio, mate? Yeah, I want a radio. Do you know what I mean? They're not being sold to experts. They're being sold to people like you and me. Right?
Yeah.
And then they're going out into the system, Phil. Unknowingly scattered around the private collections and being bought and sold in good faith, right?
Yeah.
It's only when those owners try to resell them to people who actually know what they're freaking talking about, that the damage becomes visible.
The problem becomes apparent during public exhibitions, said Eric Ficarda. When we ask individuals to loan pieces to be exhibited, they can turn out to be fake. Some of this work will only resurface after 70 or 80 years, after being passed down a number of times. We won't really measure the full extent of the problem of this fake art crisis until then.
It's a very good point.
So it's no wonder the police were heavily involved in this at the moment the little museum realised it had been had, right? It's the tip of a very, very fake iceberg.
Yeah.
So how the hell does all these problems come about, Phil?
Even at the time, Phil, of doing this podcast, which we is doing here live now in lockdown, this complex police operation is still going on, right?
Oh, shit. So have we libelled a load of people?
No, we're all right. We're all right. You know, they'd never guess them from the accents. Absolutely no problem. We pronounced their names wrong. We got the accents wrong. They'll never have a clue.
Excellent. We've changed the names to protect the innocent through sheer ignorance.
Yeah. So what I'm going to say from the off here, Phil, is that we are not going to be able to give any final answers here. Okay? Because this is an ongoing and complex police operation. But we can provide some pointers, okay? Now, our starting pointer is the museum's steering body, the Tarou Committee. Now, this consisted of Odette Trabi. Now, she is an elderly lady. She is Nadir, who had a passion for Tarou's work, and she co-founded the museum, right? So she's on the steering committee. Then you've got two Perpignan art dealers, right? Gerard Roquet and Alain Lesage, and they worked together. Now, it was Alain Lesage who sold the artworks to the museum, and it was Gerard Roquet who authenticated them. Okay, now, in June 2019, a Guardian journalist called Phil Hode, right, he travelled to Elle in an attempt to unravel all of this and fine Lesage and Roquet and have a word with them. Sounds like a sort of Warner Brothers cartoon, Lesage and Roquet.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. It's like a mouse and a rabbit and they play tennis or something like that.
Phil Hode says,
I find Roquet and Lesage's peach-fronted shop in a pokey square round the corner from the cathedral. No one answers the bell. I peer up the three-story facade. Lattice shutters have been drawn halfway down the windows. Someone taps me on the shoulder. It's the waiter from the cafe opposite who has seen me snooping. They're always up there looking out, he says. They can see you, but you can't see them.
Ooh, that is sinister, isn't it? But it gets better than that, Phil, because when Horde actually gets to finally meet Gerard Roquet and asks him about the Musée Etienne Tarou situation, he says,
they have made a mountain out of a molehill. I told them not to, but they have done that thing. They have made mountains out of molehills. There are maybe some doubts about 10% of the collection. But I don't know where they get his 60% from. Where they get the number from? I don't know. I don't know where they get 60% number from.
Beautifully done, Phil. The important thing to note here is that Roque and his business partner, Alain Lesage, were the two people who supplied the museum's co-founder and buyer, Odette Trabi, with lots of Tarou's paintings. Because of that, she invited Roquet onto the museum's steering committee. And from there, once he was in on the steering committee, he issued certificates of authenticity virtually as a formality.
So he basically got himself on the inside, didn't he? We have to say allegedly on this, all this stuff.
Oh, and absolutely allegedly.
You're implying that he knew and he sort of ingratiated himself with Odette to get onto the steering committee to just validate all of these dodgy paintings.
Well, it seems that way, doesn't it? I mean, he's one half of the people selling the paintings.
Yeah.
that is authenticating them. Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Yeah, sounds dodgy.
Funny enough, he doesn't agree, though.
No.
Because he says that he saw no conflict of interest at all by saying that these paintings are perfectly all right, even though they were sold by him and his business partner to the museum, where he is employed to say yes or no. Phil.
It is totally normal. Totally normal. It is within the rules. In Paris, there are plenty of people on committees who buy and sell as normal.
Well, regarding the improbable stylistic variations among the works that we've
mentioned. And the accents on show.
They're all top quality. They would have all passed the hello hello test.
I don't know what you're talking about. These are top quality accents. I verified them myself. Sure, I make the accent, but I verify the accents fine. Everybody does it this way.
Regarding the improbable stylistic variations among the works, Roque argues that there is no problem because Teru...
He did a bit of everything, you know. he did a bit of everything. Sometimes he painted trees this way, sometimes this way. You know, he did a different way each time, you know. It's fine! It's fine! Stop going on about it! It's fine! Have a drink. Come on, me, have a drink. You forget about it.
But what about that anachronism where a tower that wasn't built until 35 years after Terrace's death appears in one of his alleged paintings?
The painter, he paints what he sees, yeah, but also what he imagines. All the greatest painters did it. If I say when Teru painted it, he decides to give it different roof. Who can prove the contrary? Who can prove it? He give it different roof. He said not a pointy roof. He give it flat roof. Who can prove different? You cannot prove it was pointy.
Ah, but when it's mentioned to Roque that the precise roof painting was the one that was built 40 years later, Roque draws on his gitan and remarks...
All this saying, he couldn't have imagined a roof. I see that it's idiotic. I'm an expert. I'm an expert in Teru. I can say that's how he did things. That's how he did things. He sometimes he see pointy roof. He say, I paint flat roof. End of story. Come here, we have a drink.
I'm not sold. I have to be honest with you, Phil. I'm not sold. And I think my lack of being convinced by him is solidified further when he is asked where he got the paintings that he sold on.
They mainly come from four places. Willow dealers. Mostly they come from Monsieur X.
Wheeler dealers and Monsieur X. That's brilliant.
He is a friend of mine, is Monsieur X. He sells the paintings out of the back of his van. Don't think about it too much. Hey, come on, we have a drink.
It's a battered citron. Weekdays he does fake art. Weekends he does crepes down the local farmer's market in the UK.
It's one of those cars where you open the back door and two sheep run out. You know, yeah. Don't worry, I'm taking them to my sister-in-law. I've got a Picasso here, a Picasso, a Van Gogh. Don't worry about it.
It turns out that Monsieur X is a former estate agent, of course he is, who lives in the region, and his real name is Monsieur Emiel. Now, Gerard Roque paid him in luxury watches worth 25,000 euros and thousands in banknotes for his services.
Oh, wow.
Now, this wasn't unusual in art dealing, Roque claims, because many art dealers want to avoid tax audits.
But that's against the law anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, which he's just admitted.
It's like saying, hey, it's fine, I just want, it's just tax evasion, what? I didn't want to pay the tax, so I paid him in watches.
He's pleading innocence with illegality.
I just didn't want to pay the tax. If that makes me a criminal, hey, I'm a criminal.
Now, Phil, when the Guardian journalist guy tracked down Monsieur X... He found him in a large mansion 20 miles from Elm, surrounded by spaniels. Now, the journalist mentions the name Gerard Roquet to Monsieur X, and he says,
"He's fucked us! He has fucked all of us! If I see him, I will smash his face in!"
Now, that... something's gone amiss there, but it's actually quite hard to work out the details of Monsieur X's dealings with Gerard Roquet, because they both argue surprisingly quite different things. Monsieur X denies that he's done anything wrong, and he denies that any paintings he sold Gerard Roquet were terraces or alleged terraces. He says that anything he sold him was other artists. Now, as we've said, though, Phil, the police investigation into all of this is still going on. So we just don't know the role of Gerard Roquet and Monsieur X in all of this. But I think it does rather beg the question, if Monsieur X was the source of many of the paintings that ultimately ended up in the museum, where did he get them from?
Well, a possible answer comes from Eric Ficarda himself, the man who discovered the fakes.
All right.
His hunch is that the local forgery network is split into two parts, Phil, right?
Right.
This is how it went down, right? One part targets museums and bourgeois clients, right?
Right, okay.
People are with the money,
yes,
right?
Money.
First we get at the paintings, then we get at the money, then we get at the power, right?
So one split into two parts. One targets the museums and bourgeois clients, right?
Right.
Another, the more informal street markets and regional auction houses.
Right. Right. Nice.
Two-pronged attack going on here, right? Several antiques dealers in the areas claim that organised criminal networks often play a role in introducing China-produced fakes. China, right? It's China, Phil. They're in China, right? And they're producing fake French masterpieces, right? Now, all these, they turn up in salons and flea markets and auction houses across France. Can this be real? This is mad.
It's incredible.
I mean, seriously saying that there's people in China producing fakes and then filtering them into the French art market through car boot sales. I mean,
well,
fair enough.
Seeing a 60% of this museum's art collection's fake, it's possible.
Yeah, do you remember that Guardian journalist? Well, his research into this, right, through his research into this, he said that one name... right?
Yeah.
Kept coming up. Kaiser Soze. He was one of the Wheeler Dealer art dealer people that Gerard Roquet mentions, right? You know, I buy them from Wheeler Dealers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the journalist, the Guardian journalist, tried to meet with this elusive trader, right? Mm. But the police kept on warning him off.
Right?
They said, Phil,
it could finish badly for you. He's got nothing to lose.
This is some murky shit, man. This
really
is proper Chinatown
serious.
Shit.
Really serious.
They should make a film of this. A really boring film. And so that's kind of where we are at the moment. Like, we've got journalists being warded off and, murky art dealings coming from China. It's kind of where the story ends because the police investigation is still going on, right? And no real details of this investigation have been released, right? At least not to us,
no.
Because we're a tin pot operation coming out of our bedrooms. We tried to get a statement from the French police, but they wouldn't talk to us.
They said you needed to increase your listenership by 1,000 before they'd even speak to us.
Right. Everyone we've mentioned in this podcast is still talking to the police in whatever guise that might be, right? We just don't know yet what people or what organisations are behind all of this. What we can say for certain is it's probably China's fault, right?
And now you've read that last paragraph, I would just like to put on record that I don't think for a moment that Gerard Roquet has got anything to do with this whatsoever.
Okay, one thing that we do know, Phil, though, is that Monsieur X sold his mansion and has moved somewhere else. We know not where with all his spaniels.
That's elusive.
He's gone.
I love Monsieur X with his spaniels.
I like Monsieur X. I've gone. It's a pretty sorry tale altogether. Has any good come of it, Phil Lucas?
Well, actually, Phil, it has. Yes. Human beings, being human beings... means that there are loads of people who now turn up to this little museum because they want to see the fakes.
That's great.
Yeah, they have become a sort of desirable must-see because of the notoriety.
That's awesome.
So that's great. That's great for the museum. Or it would be if all of those fakes weren't still with the police, so nobody can see them.
Shame.
I bet they're desperate to get them back. They're just like, yeah, we know they're fake, just get them back. But the thing is, it still means that the town gets money from tourism. Yeah. And a proportion of the people who turn up for the fakes stay to look at the exhibits in the museum that are real, because they have actually got some real ones as well. Mm. And in fact, a report says that the town itself has never been busier.
Everybody wins!
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Everybody wins!
And in an even more unusual twist, right, local auctioneers are now speculating that a genuine terrace fake...
Oh, that's right, lovely.
Right, could be more desirable to collectors than a real terrace.
That's amazing. I love that. Awesome.
I think that's fantastic. And, oh, don't forget old Monsieur Burial, the mayor, you know, the guy who spent all the money.
I feel sorry for him.
I do, Phil, but he's actually quite upbeat.
Oh.
Because he said...
We will continue to promote local art. Yes, we have invested 300,000 euros in refurbishing the museum.
I bet he's looking with disdain as he looks at the museum and said, we spent 300 euros refurbishing that museum and we're... By heck, we're going to have a good time.
So what are the conclusions, Phil? What's the end of this dirty business?
Well, so we don't know how it played out legally, but I would say, one, no publicity is bad publicity.
Absolutely not.
Number two, right?
Yep.
If you're a small regional art gallery, make sure that the person who authenticates your acquisitions is not the same person who's selling them to you.
It's essentially going, do you want to buy this watch? Is it real? Yeah.
Yeah. And linked to that, if you are a small regional art gallery and you can afford it, do consider a dedicated curator who's somewhat independent.
Yes.
Point four, don't trust regional art dealers, particularly ones called Monsieur X.
Yeah, I think that's good. That's good. Yes.
And I think point five is a cautionary one for all of us at the moment. Take care, because when the private collectors of Teru's work all die off in about 30 years...
Oh, God, yeah, of course.
All those fakes are going to come back onto the market. So be aware if you're in the market... people who are listening to this.
That is amazing. That is properly amazing. I think that's one of my favourite ones that we've done. the fabulous story of the Teru art fakes. Was it our fault or God's fault, Phil Lucas?
Well, it was definitely our fault.
Absolutely our fault, yes.
Maybe Monsieur X's fault too, but he is one of us, so it's our fault.
And so until the police investigation finishes, we just don't know. We just do not know whose fault it was. But it was bloody marvellous. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Crash Bang Wallop podcast in lockdown. This is the second one we've done in lockdown. Seems to have working all right, doesn't it?
Quite enjoying it. I'm quite looking forward to doing this in future. There's no need for us to meet anymore, is there?
I'd rather we didn't, to be honest. In fact, I think it's not only there's no need for you and me to meet, there's no need for me to meet anybody ever again, as far as I'm concerned. I'm 5 weeks into this and I'm thoroughly enjoying my new life, not conversing with any other human beings whatsoever. Even me and my wife don't talk to each other anymore, and it's perfect. So
we've gone native. That's the thing. We've gone native and realised that native is good.
That's right. We've had some lovely reviews since our last podcast, haven't we, Mr. Philip Lucas?
We have, yes. Thank you very much indeed. We had one from Doonypeds, and they have said, currently binge listening, now one of my all-time favourites. Phil and Phil are quick and witty and informative, which is incredibly kind. Thank you very much indeed. We had another one from HoagieYTFC, who said, you wouldn't think there are many laughs to be had out of disaster.
And he'd be right. Nailed it. Well, thanks very much for your comments.
They do go on, and they don't mean they go on as in, oh my God, they go on, as in they continue. And very nice it is. Thank you very much, HoagieYTFC. And thank you to both of you. Very kind. We had something else we need to do, which we need to give a shout out, Phil. A shout out.
Oh, right.
To a lady called Laura, who listens to the show and has been enjoying it. So, hello, Laura.
Hello, Laura.
Now, Laura isn't on Twitter yet.
Right.
But her husband, Sheru Asemba, he contacted us to say that Laura asked him to thank us on her behalf because she doesn't have Twitter and our podcast made her laugh while the world is so currently horrible. So...
And we're light in the darkness.
You've got a low bar of what you need to perk yourself up, Laura. But thank you very much. It's lovely you took the time to message us. And thank you also to Sheru Asemba for passing it on. So that's very, very kind of you. Thank you very much.
And thanks for everybody else who sent us nice things on Twitter and nice reviews. If you want to review the show, you very much can. That'd be lovely. We'll read your reviews out and we'll read them all. And thanks so much for doing that. We're back relatively soon, aren't we, with a new disgusting, horrific disaster to get you through the weird lockdown times. But until then, Phil Lucas, have you got anything to add, you bastard?
No, I'm spent.
Thank you so much for listening to this. We'll see you next time. Goodbye!
Thank you, bye-bye.